All of us, I suspect, store in our minds words that speak to our personal concern. They may include excerpts from poetry, maxims we learned in childhood, pithy asides from friends. Whatever the source, whenever we hear them, we tend to pause, stop what we are doing, and think about them. Such is the character of the well-known prayer I have chosen for our thoughts this morning. Since 1942, it has been the official invocation of Alcoholics Anonymous. Much of its present form was given it by the Protestant theologian Reinhold Niebuhr. But some of its fundamental elements can be traced back to the writings of the Roman statesman and orator Marcus Cicero. The Alcoholics Anonymous version of the prayer goes like this: God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Embedded in these words, I believe, is a message for all of us. It's a message that underscores what you and I have to do if we are to be fully engaged in our world. First of all, the prayer acknowledges change as the basic reality of life. But it goes further. It presents us with seemingly antithetical advice about our attitudes when facing life's changes. It links serenity, peace of mind, with our willingness to accept things pretty much as they are. Yet its call for courage prompts an opposite reaction. It prompts us not to accept everything that comes our way. It's this paradoxical advice I want us to look at this morning. For the heart of this three-line prayer lies not in the fact that it assumes that we have the capacity for both kinds of responses. It lies in the conviction that we must both have both the intellectual and moral sensitivity, the wisdom, if you like, to know when we are called to accept things and when we are called to be active participants in change. It implies the ability to make discriminating judgments and the capacity to act upon them. Let's look at the words more closely. What is the prayer asking for? Initially, it's asking that we have the serenity, the tranquility of spirit, to accept the things that cannot be changed. Such advice is not always that easy for us to accept. We who live in the developed world through our scientific and technological know-how have amassed enormous wealth and power. The conviction that we are captains of our own souls and masters of our own fate has contributed to the confidence that has been the major ingredient in these achievements. But this confidence has a negative side. It has led some to believe that progress in all matters is inevitable. How many of you remember the old willful slogan of Unitarian James Freeman Clark? That trumpets people's commitment to the progress of mankind onward and upward forever. Now, don't misunderstand me. Hope for the future is necessary for human development. But unless optimism is tempered by realism, unless there is an acceptance of life's boundaries, boundless faith in the future can lead to disaster. Nazism, grounded in its hateful ideology of racial and ethnic supremacy, also possessed unrestrained trust in its capacity to conquer and rule. Its rejection of the limitations of its ambitions only added to the madness and led to its destruction. The simple truth is, reality places constraints upon us, and some of these constraints are not changeable. It puts natural constraints upon us. Consider the aging process. It's an inevitable process, and we must accept the elemental principle of geriatrics if we are to trim our efforts to fit our capacities. Reality puts time and place constraints upon us. We may wish that we have been born in some other era, in some other part of the globe, but the fact is we live now in this particular community, under these particular circumstances, in this period of history, in the United States of America, in the year 2014, with all its threats and promises. It is here that we are called to labor and to serve. Reality places ethical constraints upon us. If we are to develop mutually supporting relationships with our fellow human beings, we have to abide by certain elementary rules of behavior. We have to accept the limitations that come whenever people seek to build a society committed to law and order, justice and compassion. These are the moral constraints that make humane living possible. Then reality demands that we acknowledge certain personal constraints. It requires that we learn to accept ourselves. This means realistically assessing our strengths and weaknesses. It means setting achievable goals. Is there anything sadder than people who strive relentlessly for that which is beyond reach? And who then end up cursing the universe because they are unable to attain the unattainable. We can go further, of course. Suffice it to say that a full life requires serenity of learning how to live and best we can within the frames reality places around us. We have to accept the things we cannot change. But the prayer stresses equally the opposite side of the coin. It asks that we be granted the courage to change the things we can. While some things are not changeable, there are many things in our world that can and should be changed. Occasionally, we have to be reminded what individuals can do and have done to change the course of history. The lifetime of some of us seated here has been replete with instances of men and women who, under the force of a particular set of circumstances, became unexpected yet remarkable agents of change. I think of a rather obscure, run-of-the-mill lawyer practicing in Durban, South Africa. Seeing the discrimination against Asian people living in that land, He gives up his practice. He returns to his native India. There he walks the highways and the byways of that great subcontinent. He becomes the liberator of his people and one of the great spiritual and moral geniuses of the modern age. For I think of the late Rosa Parks, a black working woman from Montgomery, Alabama. She declines to go to the rear of the bus when a driver orders her to give up her seat to a white person. Her simple act of defiance is the birth pangs of a movement that is to bring new law and sweeping alteration of political and social rights to minorities throughout our country. I think of the leader of that desegregation movement, an African-American preacher in his 20s who has just earned his PhD from Boston University. By default, more than desire, he becomes the leader of the Montgomery bus boycott that Rosa Parks inspired. He moves from that position and is, until his assassination in 1969, the clearest, most unrelenting voice for social justice on the American scene. And I think of Mr. Roncalli, the son of an Italian farmer. He chooses to be a priest. At 77, he is the least likely of Rome's cardinals to be elected pope. Yet in 1958, he reaches that office as a compromise candidate on the ninth ballot. Everyone, liberals and conservatives, agree that it will hardly rock the ecclesiastical ship. But that's exactly what he does. As Pope John XXIII, he calls a Vatican Council that opens the church to a new era of critical reform within and lively cooperation with the outside world. Reforms that will persist no matter what subsequent popes do. One can mention other figures, Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela, women and men who come to terms with life constraints, but who choose within the confines of those limitations to become servants of renewal and change. Each of these people lived by a simple truth. Edward Everett Hale, the Unitarian minister of Boston's oldest church, enunciated it a century and a half ago when he wrote, "I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do that something that I can do." The fact is, none of these people stood alone. Great men and women always stand on the shoulders of ordinary people like you and me, who catch their visions and summon up the courage to support them in their cause. You and I will never be Gandhis, Martin Luther Kings, Pope Johns, or Rosa Parks. Nevertheless, we can all be agents of change in the world in which we spend our days. We can all learn to do those some things we realistically can do. We can all work to turn great principles into the responsibilities at hand. This brings us to the final clause of the prayer. It asks that we be granted the wisdom to know the difference between what cannot be changed and what can. And isn't this the heart of the matter? It's not always easy to determine what can and cannot be changed. There are whole areas of human endeavor that are best gray areas. 65 years ago, it was beyond human capabilities to shoot a rocket around the Earth, much less place a man on the moon. At the same time, polio was beyond our capacity to prevent. The day may not be far off when people will learn to prevent most heart attacks, cure Alzheimer's, perhaps create living cells to replace dying ones. Whole areas in which we could not change life circumstances will succumb to human knowledge and fall under human responsibility. This does not say that all life will be subject to people's free, willing choice and control. Hardly. Many old constraints will remain, new ones will appear. The only thing we are acknowledging here is that sensitivity to the human situation, genuine wisdom, requires that we be open to the gray areas of knowledge, that we constantly be aware of where barriers can be pushed back. But doesn't wisdom demand more of us than trusting in scientific and technological advances that will raise standards of our physical and material existence? Doesn't it demand a larger frame of reference and overview that gives our lives moral and spiritual direction? After all, we can have the courage to change what we can only if we have some idea where we want life's journey to take us. We have to have an adequate faith to live by. This is what James Luther Adams is declaring in that passage we read for our second reading. A church, a religion, a faith, he tells us, has to have more to it than a ritual life. It also has to have a prophetic dimension. That is, it has to have a vision of what ought to be. And it's through the lenses of that vision that you and I should be able to interpret the signs of the times. We should be able to read the shape of things to come, but we must always read them in terms of humanity's struggle to enhance the levels of justice and decency in our world. To the extent we belong to a faith community committed to this overall purpose, we share in what Adams calls the prophetic function. Only as we think and work together for this end do we find ourselves part of the process of making history and not merely being pushed around by it. But being part of the struggle to enhance the levels of justice and decency in our world requires something from us personally. It requires an awakening within us. It's the need for such an inner awakening that the prophet Isaiah emphasizes in the verses that make up our first reading. Let's be clear here. Isaiah is not speaking against fasting per se. Fasting, after all, belongs to the Hebrews' ceremonial religious life, especially in times of political and social upheaval. Rather, he is announcing that God's first demand from the people, their first commitment, their first giving of themselves, has to be living out in their daily lives the responsibilities of the compassionate life. unless they are committed to breaking the bonds of injustice, unless they are committed to freeing the oppressed, sharing their bread with the hungry, clothing the naked, sheltering the homeless. All their fasting, all their religious ceremonies count for nothing. And it is this level of commitment, I suggest, that must lie at the center of our overall vision as we go about distinguishing what can and cannot be changed. It is this level of commitment to bring a caring, healing dimension to the life we share with one another that we must grapple to our hearts. And for this to happen, we first have to take time with ourselves. We first have to take time to open ourselves to the promptings of that grace-filled spirit operating within us, empowering us to give ourselves to the creating and maintaining of an ever more humanely sensitive world. Keep in mind, justice and decency are not self-generating events. They have roots, and they come into existence only as we nourish those roots, only as we allow the spirit of loving kindness, our care for the welfare of others, to become the permanent resident within us and to take command of our souls. May the full range and depth of this oh-so-simple prayer not be lost upon us as we go about confronting the day's challenges. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.